if you've ever, you know, opened an article about investing and just felt completely lost in all the jargon, PE ratios, EBITDA, derivatives, well, you're definitely not alone.
Oh, absolutely. The world of investing in shares, it often feels like it's designed to be intimidating, doesn't it? Especially with all those dramatic news stories about volatility.
Exactly. So our mission in this deep dive is really to cut through all that noise.
Right. We want to give you the basic sort of foundational knowledge and a clear plan.
And hopefully show that investing in shares is actually one of the most effective ways to grow your wealth over the long term.
It really can be. So let's start super basic. Forget the fancy charts for a second.
Okay.
When you buy a share, what you're doing is simple. You're buying a tiny, tiny piece of a company, actual ownership.
Right, a little slice of the pie.
Precisely. And owning that slice gives you two main ways you might benefit.
Okay, what are they?
First, if the company does well, you know, grows its business, becomes more profitable, the value of your share can go up. That's share price growth.
Makes sense. And the second way?
Dividends. If the company makes good profits, they might decide to share some of that profit directly with the owners, that's you, through cash payments. Those are dividends.
And the really good news for beginners, which our research kept highlighting, is that you don't need a huge pile of cash to get started, right?
Not at all. That's a common misconception. The real key is consistency. Starting small, learning as you go, gaining that experience, and that's much more powerful than waiting forever to save up a big lump sum.
So consistency and, I guess, building confidence through understanding.
That's the formula, yeah. Knowledge builds confidence.
Okay, let's spend a bit more time on that idea of ownership then. It's not just trading numbers on a screen. You're actually participating in a company's future.
That's a crucial mindset shift. You're investing in a business.
But if I'm buying these pieces of companies, are all the pieces the same? Like, are there different types of shares I need to know about?
That's a really good question for a new investor. And no, they're not all identical. The two main types you'll likely come across as a beginner are ordinary shares and preferred shares.
Okay, walk us through those. What's the difference?
So ordinary shares are the most common. When people just say stocks or shares, they usually mean these.
Got it.
They typically give you the right to vote at shareholder meetings, you know, have a say in how the company is run. And they offer the potential for dividends and that share price growth we talked about.
So they're kind of the standard option.
Exactly. They're the main way most people invest for growth.
And the other type you mentioned, preferred shares.
Right, preferred shares. Now, these usually don't come with voting rights.
Oh, okay. Why would you want those then?
Well, there's a trade-off. They get priority when it comes to dividends. So if a company has a bit of a tough year but still manages to pay out some dividends, the preferred shareholders get paid before the ordinary shareholders.
Ah, so it's about income security, maybe.
Precisely. They're generally seen as a bit lower risk from an income perspective. Less about chasing huge growth, more about getting a more predictable, prioritized income stream from those dividends.
That clarifies things. So for most beginners focused on growth, ordinary shares are probably the main focus.
Generally, yes. That's the typical starting point.
And this potential for growth and maybe dividends, that's really the core reason people choose shares over just, say, putting money in a savings account, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, compared to the, frankly, minimal returns you often get from standard savings accounts or fixed deposits these days, shares offer significantly higher potential for growth over the long haul.
Because you're tapping into the actual success of businesses.
Exactly. You're harnessing the profitability of some of the biggest, most innovative companies in the world. It gives you access you just couldn't get otherwise.
Okay, so we know there's potential, but we also know it can feel overwhelming and there's risk. What are the specific advantages that make pushing through that initial feeling worthwhile?
Well, the biggest one is definitely the growth factor. We touched on it, but it's key. Yes, there will be short-term ups and downs. That's totally normal. The market fluctuates daily.
Right.
But historically, if you look at the long-term trend, the market has shown a strong tendency to grow. And that's where the power of compounding really kicks in.
Compounding. That's a word everyone uses. Can you break down what that means in practical terms for someone just starting out?
Sure. Think of it like a snowball rolling downhill. Your initial investment earns a return, maybe through price growth or dividends.
Okay.
The next year, you're earning a return, not just on your original money, but also on the profit that money already made.
Mm-hmm.
So your growth starts earning its own growth.
Ah, so it accelerates over time.
Exactly. Over many years, even decades, That snowball effect is how significant wealth can be built, often starting from relatively modest beginnings.
And another huge point you mentioned earlier, accessibility, feels like it's easier than ever to actually get started now.
It really is. The barrier to entry has dropped dramatically. Many online platforms now offer fractional shares.
What does that mean exactly?
It means if one share of, say, a big tech company costs $1,000, you don't need the full $1,000 to invest. You could buy maybe $50 or $100 worth of that share.
So you can own a piece of a pricey share without needing a fortune?
Precisely. It makes it much more affordable to start and, importantly, to diversify even with small amounts of money. Spread your bets, so to speak.
That leads nicely into another advantage often mentioned, flexibility or liquidity. What does liquidity mean for the average person? Is it just about selling quickly?
You pretty much hit the nail on the head. Liquidity refers to how easily and quickly you can convert an asset back into cash without causing a big drop in its price.
And shares are generally good for that.
Very good. Shares are considered highly liquid. Usually you can sell them online within minutes during market hours. Compare that to something like selling a house, which can take months, right?
Definitely. So that flexibility lets you adjust your plans if needed.
Exactly. Life changes, goals change, market conditions change. Liquidity gives you the agility to respond.
And there's one more benefit, maybe less tangible but still important, the learning aspect. Just by being invested, you start learning more about finance and the economy.
You really do. It almost forces you, in a good way, to pay attention to business news. Understand what drives company performance, get a feel for economic trends, maybe even political stability.
So it's like a real-world education.
It is, and that foundational knowledge you gain, even just by starting small, is incredibly valuable for making smarter financial decisions throughout your life. Okay, let's get really practical now. I think the biggest hurdle for many beginners is moving from, okay, I get it, I should probably invest, to actually deciding what to invest in.
Yeah, the where do I even start question.
Exactly. So we've put together a kind of six-step beginner's guide, a roadmap to help you move from just guessing to making more informed choices.
Perfect. Let's hear it. Step one.
Step one. Start with familiarity. Seriously, don't feel pressured to find some obscure hot tip stock. Look at the companies you already know and interact with.
Like
the bank you use, the supermarket you shop at, the tech company whose phone or computer you're using right now. If you understand their business because you're a customer, it's much easier to understand their potential.
That makes sense. It takes away some of the mystery. Okay, what's step two?
Step two. Check the fundamentals. Now, don't panic. This doesn't mean you need an accounting degree.
Good. What are the absolute basics a beginner should look for?
Focus on maybe just two simple things initially. First, look for reasonably consistent revenue growth. Is the company selling more stuff or services year after year? Most platforms provide simple charts for this.
Okay, growing sales. What's the second?
Check the debt level. Is the company loaded with debt, or does it seem manageable for its size? Again, summaries are often available. A company that's growing and not drowning in debt is generally a sign of, well, basic health.
Healthy company, check. Then step three.
Step three. Consider industry trends. So zoom out from the specific company and look at the whole sector it operates in.
Are we looking for just the fastest growing industries like tech, or is stability good too?
Stability can be great, especially for beginners. But you do want to think about the long-term direction. Is this industry generally growing, like, say, renewable energy or healthcare technology? Or is it facing major challenges or disruption?
So avoid industries that might be shrinking long term.
Generally, yes. You kind of want to invest with the tide in sectors that are likely solving future problems or meeting growing demands.
Got it. On to step four.
Step four. Think long term, not short term. This is maybe the hardest one psychologically.
Because people get caught up in the daily news and price swings.
Exactly. A stock is up 2% today. I should buy. It's down 3% tomorrow. Oh no, sell everything. It's easy to get whipsawed.
It's like checking the weather forecast every 5 minutes and changing your outfit constantly.
That's a perfect analogy. The goal here should be to find companies whose shares you'd feel comfortable owning for years. Think 5, 10, maybe even 15 years or more. That long-term compounding growth we talked about almost always beats trying to jump in and out based on short-term noise.
Okay, long-term focus. Step five must be diversification.
Yeah.
It always comes up.
You know it. Step five, diversify early on. This is non-negotiable, even if you're starting small.
Why is it so crucial?
Because if you put all your money into just one single stock and that company runs into serious trouble, well, your investment could take a massive hit.
Right.
But if you spread your money across, say, 3, 4, or 5 stocks in different sectors, maybe some tech, some healthcare, some consumer goods, some finance, you build a cushion. If one does poorly, the others can help balance it out.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
The oldest rule in the book, and still the best.
Okay, and finally, step 6.
Step 6, use reliable tools. Don't have to do all this research completely from scratch in a vacuum.
What kind of tools are helpful?
Most good online investing platforms offer really useful resources. Look for things like analyst ratings. These summarize what professional analysts think about a stock. Or use stock screeners tools that let you filter thousands of stocks based on criteria you set, like low debt or consistent revenue growth.
So they help you narrow down the options based on the fundamentals and trends we just talked about.
Exactly. There are shortcuts to help you make more informed, less random decisions.
Okay, so you followed the steps, you've bought some shares. But the work doesn't stop there, does it? There's the ongoing monitoring part.
Correct. Investing isn't a set it and forget it thing entirely. But the way you monitor is critical. It needs to align with that long-term strategy, not react to every market blip.
So how often should someone realistically be checking their portfolio? Daily? Weekly?
Honestly, for most long-term investors, checking maybe once a month or even once a quarter is plenty.
Really? Not more often?
Looking too often, like daily, is usually counterproductive. It just increases the temptation to make emotional decisions based on short-term noise. Those scheduled, less frequent check-ins help you stay focused on the bigger picture. Step 4. The long term.
And that ties into avoiding panic selling, which you mentioned is tough. When the market takes a dip, and we know it will sometimes.
The instinct is to sell to stop the losses. It feels like the safe thing to do.
But it's usually not.
It's usually the worst thing to do. Market dips are a normal part of investing. If you sell during a downturn, you turn a temporary paper loss into a permanent real loss. Quality investments tend to recover over time. Panic selling means you lock in the loss and you miss out on the eventual recovery.
You have to ride out the storm, assuming you chose well initially.
Exactly. Patience and discipline are key during those times.
Okay, another aspect of ongoing management is rebalancing. I've heard this term. If one of my stocks does really well and doubles, isn't that just good? Why would I want to rebalance or change anything?
It is good. It's great when an investment performs well. But think about your overall plan. Let's say you decided initially you were comfortable with a 60% shares and 40% bonds portfolio mix for your risk tolerance.
Okay.
If your shares double in value while your bonds stay relatively stable, suddenly your portfolio might be, say, 75% shares and only 25% bonds.
Ah, so my actual risk level has drifted upwards without me realizing it.
Precisely. You've become more exposed to stock market volatility than you originally intended. Rebalancing is simply the process of selling a small portion of the assets that have grown disproportionately large.
Like those shares that doubled.
And reinvesting the proceeds into the assets that have lagged, or perhaps into other complementary assets, to bring your portfolio back to your original target percentages, like 60-40 in our example.
So it's like trimming a plant to keep it healthy and in the shape you want.
That's a great way to put it. It maintains your intended diversification and keeps your risk level aligned with your comfort zone.
You mentioned complementary assets there. We focused on shares as the growth engine, but they are volatile. What else should beginners think about to add some stability?
Right. A well-structured portfolio isn't usually just shares. You need other ingredients to balance things out. The classic complementary assets are bonds. These are essentially loans to governments or companies that pay a fixed rate of interest. They're generally lower risk than shares.
Okay. Bonds for stability. What else?
Real estate is another big one. Owning property, either directly or through funds, gives you a tangible asset that often generates income and tends to move differently to the stock market.
So different cycles can smooth out the ride. Are there other options beyond those two?
Yeah, there's a whole category called alternative investments. This can include things like commodities, like gold or oil, private equity, or certain types of funds.
And our research mentioned things like asset-backed opportunities becoming more accessible.
That's right. There are newer platforms emerging that allow investors to get exposure to things backed by tangible, real-world assets. Could be infrastructure projects, specific equipment leases, things like that. The idea is they offer returns that aren't necessarily tied directly to the ups and downs of the main stock market, adding another layer of diversification and potential stability.
So it sounds like the real key isn't just picking one winning stock, but building a balanced structure that includes shares and these other stabilizing elements.
That's really the core of smart long-term investing. So to kind of wrap things up, success for a beginner investing in shares really boils down to a few key things. First, understanding those basics we covered, what a share is, how you benefit.
Right, getting the foundation solid.
Second, using that six-step roadmap or something similar to build confidence and make informed choices, not just guesses.
Moving from confusion to a clear process.
Third, consistently monitoring, but with a long-term perspective, avoiding panic and rebalancing when needed.
Discipline and patience.
And finally, remembering that shares, while powerful for growth, are usually best used as part of a diversified portfolio that includes those more stable, complementary assets.
So the main takeaway is, shares are a key piece, maybe the engine, but you need the whole vehicle, the whole balanced puzzle, for the long journey.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Taking action based on knowledge, having patience, making consistent, informed, even small decisions, that's what truly leads to building wealth over time.
And actually, learning about shares has that side benefit we mentioned. It teaches you so much about how businesses work, how the economy functions.
Absolutely. It demystifies a lot about the financial world, which is empowering in itself.
So since investing, even just a little, forces you to engage with and understand these crucial economic forces, profit, debt, growth sectors, global trends, here's a final thought for you, our listener, to consider.
What vital understanding of how the world actually works, how value is created and grows, might you be missing out on if you choose not to participate, even in a small way, in the growth of the economy through investing?
Something to think about. We'll explore more next time on The Deep Dive.